I'm going to share some kind of preliminary results of some pilot research that we've been doing at Kent State University, me and a colleague, Lisa Audette, who couldn't be here for this conference, and a doctoral student, Shay Fassell, who is here but maybe not really here. Oh, no, she really isn't here. I feel like at this time of the day, when all of you have been sitting a really long time, and if you're like me, eating much more than you usually do, I should do something to entertain you, but I really can't think of anything appropriate for this forum. And so I apologize, I'm not going to be able to entertain you at all. The purpose of this study, this data is from kind of a larger study, but what I'm reporting on today is to describe and compare language environment characteristics of young children with autism spectrum disorders with varying language levels using LENA and SALT. So we're using both of those technologies. We're using LENA to collect quantitative data, and we're using SALT to collect quantitative data and some qualitative data, and I'll tell you about what those things look like in a couple of minutes. So we're looking at the amount of language that is directed toward young children with autism, the types of utterances that are being used, and the functions of those utterances, so looking at the pragmatic functions. One of the things that, in my experience teaching young children with autism and consulting and working in schools, is that sometimes it feels like young children with autism, especially with lower language levels, get directed a lot. Sit down, come here, stop that, put that there. And so we're really looking at the functions of adult language too. Our participants for this study include 13 male children. I've been sitting here today watching all the pictures of little tiny babies wearing these LENA vests with big smiles on their face. It makes me think of all the kids with autism that I worked with that weren't so happy to wear the pretty little LENA vests. And so we have all male children, mostly because most children with autism are male, and the girls that we tried to have in our study did not like the best. So if I have one recommendation to the LENA Foundation, it's pink and purple and Barbies and princess vests. And I think we might have a little more success. Our students were ages 28 to 67 months at the beginning of the study, older than a lot of the groups that we've been talking about today. In our area in Northeastern Ohio, kids are not being diagnosed as early as we would like, and so we're not really getting them until later. 9 of the kids, based on ADAS scores that we administered, fell in the category of autism, and the others fell in the category of autism spectrum disorder, so a little bit more mildly affected. All the children were also diagnosed by a medical professional with an autism spectrum disorder. All of the participants had language scores that were at least a little bit below average based on the Vineland Adaptive Behavior Scales and the SELF-P that we administered as part of our assessment protocol. Not all of the kids could participate in the SELF-P, only 5 could. Actually, 6 could, but for some reason, I don't know data on the 6. The other kids couldn't do the test items, and we couldn't gather that information from them. All right, in terms of our method, we had parental consent. Because we couldn't really gather consent from our child participants, if they refused to wear the vest, we assumed they did not consent. And we did have a couple who did not consent, and so they're not included in this. We also did a parent interview, and during that interview, we completed the Vineland Adaptive Behavior Scales. We also had parents complete the Parenting Stress Index, but that's not at all related to this study that I'm talking about today. The child participants were assessed using the ADAS-G modules 1 and 2, depending on the child's language level, and then the SELF preschool second edition. And then we also collected full day, although they weren't always full day, the goal was full day language samples at the beginning of the study and every 3 months, and then again at the end of the study. And the goal was to get full day samples that included both home and school environments. Didn't always happen, but that was the goal. I'll tell you what we really got in a couple of minutes. And then what we did is that we identified, using the kind of five-minute segment view of the LENA output, we identified the highest 15-minute adult word count segments, and those were the segments that we analyzed using SALT. So we identified those target segments because we were really interested in what are adults doing, and so our presumption was that those segments would be the most representative of adult language and potentially individualization of adult language for young kids. What I want to tell you is that we worked really hard to identify the highest 15 minutes of adults where they were actually interacting with the target child. So if we listened to the data, and it was during morning circle, which was not uncommon, but then it's two or three adults and five or six kids, and there's a lot going on, we would go to the next adult word count segment, and we would look at that or listen to that. If we got to three and we didn't find any that the adult was interacting initially, just individually, at least predominantly in that segment with the target child, then we just did the highest a word count segment, and I'll tell you what that looked like in a minute. Okay, after we did all of this, we transcribed samples, and that's, as someone else said, it takes a long time. We have a cadre of student transcribers who are fantastic, but it takes them about 2 hours to transcribe 15-minute segments. It's very time-consuming. We establish reliability with them, and they're very good, and our reliability is very high. It's generally over 95%. And when we're transcribing in SALT, we use typical SALT conventions for utterance boundaries, and the conventions we used is that an utterance was a child turn or an adult turn followed by the other. So there's either a change in person turns or there's a two-second pause between the same speaker. So if I'm the adult and I say, "Hey, buddy, it's time to go to the sensory room," and then there's nothing, then I say, "You know, come on, Johnny." Those are two different utterances because I left 2 seconds. Well, I don't know if I really did in this case, but I left 2 seconds in between. And then we use, traditional SALT conventions for, transcribing morphemes and all of that kind of stuff. We also developed a coding system for utterances so that each adult utterance got coded for what pragmatic function it fulfilled. And I'll tell you what those different pragmatic functions are. We also coded each adult utterance if it was directed at someone other than the target child. So if it was directed at another child, if it was directed at another adult, if it was out there but we didn't know who it was directed to, and we also included that code if they were talking to a dog, which happened more than once. There is an adult talking to a dog, and we coded that as not child directed. We also indicated if things were group directed, so the target child was involved, but it wasn't specific to them. We also coded whether questions were yes-no questions so that we could differentiate open-ended versus yes-no questions. And then the last thing, and I'll mention this at the very end if I have time, which hopefully I will, is that we coded utterances that had multiple pragmatic functions. And so what we started to find when we were coding data is that oftentimes, given the utterance boundary conventions that we're using, that an utterance would have multiple functions. And so an adult would respond to something that the child said and then give them a direction. And so we have information about how often that was happening. Right. In terms of the results, I'm going to provide you just some overall descriptive statistics and then tell you a little bit about comparisons between low language level and higher language level kids. We had good language assessment data on the kids at the beginning of the study, and we had good language assessment data on the end. We did testing at both of those, but those were about a year apart. And some children made a lot of progress during that time. So when I was thinking about how do I characterize lower and higher level kids, what I decided to do was do it based on mean length of utterance, because we had that data frequently. And so for each collection, I could identify if it was a lower language, which in this case we're identifying as below 2, so a mean length of utterance below 2. So these are kids that are not using any words or using mostly single words, compared to kids that were using phrase speech, so they're using an MLU of at least 2 and sometimes higher. So what did we find out about the whole sample? The whole sample, the total number of transcripts that we're talking about here is 63. So this data is specific to 63 samples. This is both low language and high language kids. What we found is that based on Alina adult word count, participants were exposed to a large number of words, and the mean was 14.83 per hour. Our samples on average were a little over 8 hours long, and so this is good. When I look at the Alina information, we're in the 90th to 95th percentile of the data that they gathered for their typical younger kids. And so that seems really good. And this was across home and school environments. what maybe wasn't so exciting to me, it was kind of depressing to me, was of those 63 samples, I could only find 32, or just over half, that had segments where at least 75% of the adult language was directed toward the target child. And so what that meant is that in a lot of samples, there was language around the kids with autism, but it wasn't necessarily being used with the kids with autism. So this took the form of teachers talking about what they did on the weekend, or parents talking on the phone while the child was probably sitting in a high chair eating Cheerios. And so there's all this language, but it's not specific to the kid. So what I've done for this study is I got rid of all of those. You know, my question is really, are adults individualizing language? And so if they're talking on the phone or talking to each other, I'm going to make the assumption they're not individualizing for the child. So what I have left is 32 samples where a minimum of 75% of the language is actually child-directed. Okay. All right, so then I looked at differences using t-tests. This slide represents adult word count per hour. That's a Lena count. The adult word count per 15 minutes that I transcribe, the SALT number of words, which is a count that I can calculate with SALT, and then the SALT number of different words. And what you see here is information for the total sample, low language kids, and then high language kids. And what's, I don't know, maybe interesting and maybe not, is that the low level kids are hearing more words per hour, more words based on SALT data, and a higher variety of words. None of these differences are significant, and they're all like good numbers. Like, it makes me happy to see that people are talking to kids. But it's a little surprising to me, I guess, that there's not more differentiation in this. I looked at differences between groups in the sentence types. And so one of the things that I would have predicted is that lower language kids are hearing more statements, where higher language kids are hearing more questions, or at least I would think that, because questions would be a facilitating strategy for kids who had more language. I did see the statistically significant difference in statements in favor of low-level kids. So people were using more statements with low-level kids. We were close with questions in terms of higher-level kids, but it didn't reach statistical significance. I did see that adults were using more imitations with higher-level kids, which surprised me. I kind of expected that more for lower-level kids who are just starting to produce sounds and words, and we imitate to get them to play the imitation game. I didn't really see that. Instead, what I saw is that a higher level kid would say something and the teacher would say it to reinforce what they had just said. There was a difference in verbal utterances too. I counted verbal versus nonverbal utterances, even though this data looks like it's exactly the same, it's a rounding problem. But there were more verbal utterances used with higher level kids. Yes, no questions were used more often with lower level kids, but it didn't reach significance. I also then looked at differences in groups by pragmatic function. So the top, I don't know, seven pragmatic functions are all functions that we would think would be facilitative of language. The last couple, like directives for motor behavior, sit down, directives for prohibition, like stop that, verbal corrections, like that's not blue, silly, that's black, you know, are probably less facilitative of language. The only differences that we saw were that comments were used more frequently with lower language level kids. Sharing information, so sharing information about things that weren't in the kind of natural environment or weren't present, was more common for verbal kids. Verbal reinforcements were more common for verbal kids, and verbal corrections were close, so they didn't reach statistical significance, but they were very close. It was nice for me to see that lower level kids weren't being kind of directed to stop and sit all of the time. Okay. A couple other interesting results, interesting to me, hopefully interesting to you, is that I also looked at the adult mean length of utterance. One of my thoughts was that adults would use less complex language with lower level language level children, but I did not see that at all, which surprises me. I'm not sure what to make of it. When I think about Patricia Kuhl this morning and what we all know about kind of motheries and parenties and how we adjust language to our child's language level, you know, why, when a child's MLU is zero, are we using an MLU of seven? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, so I need to look more at that. The other thing that was kind of interesting to me was that the use of multiple pragmatic functions didn't differ between groups, and I would expect that if we have multiple pragmatic functions that it increases the processing load for kids, and so I would expect that more for higher level kids, but it wasn't necessarily being used more for higher level kids, and so that was kind of interesting. So to summarize, positive findings that young children with autism are exposed to a high number of words. To me, it's a little less positive finding that adults are not always directing their language to kids. And in some of my samples, you know, I'd have multiple samples for one kid, never found a time in their school or home program where people were talking to them, and that was more common in low language level kids. There's some evidence of individualization of adult language in relation to child language, but not necessarily as much as I thought, although I have very small numbers, and so maybe it'll get better as my numbers get better. And I, you know, need, in terms of contextualizing this information, I really need to compare it to other language disabled kids and typically developing kids.